You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
My name is Scott Nye, and this is Talking Radical Radio.
A real barrier for injured workers is when they're trying to get medical attention, well, right away you get stigmatized. The other part of it is the doctor isn't listened to. People take 10 years to get through the appeal system, but by the time your body has lived with all of that, your hopes of recovery are very slim, if there are any at all.
That's the voice of Janet Patterson. She, Steve Mantis, and Eugene LeFrancois are today's guests on Talking Radical Radio. This show brings you grassroots voices from across Canada. We give you the chance to hear many different people who are involved in many different struggles, talk about what they're doing, how they're doing it, and why they're doing it, in the belief that such listening can strengthen all of our efforts to change the world. LeFrancois, Mantis, and Patterson live in Thunder Bay, Ontario, on the north shore of Lake Superior. The economy in Thunder Bay has in the past heavily featured forestry and mining, though in more recent years those industries have shrunk, and the city is now an important regional center for healthcare, education, and other services. All three are injured workers, and have been for a long time. LeFrancois is the president of the Thunder Bay and District Injured Workers Support Group, while Mantis is that group's treasurer. And Patterson is the president of the Ontario Network of Injured Workers Groups. Ontario's first law related to the compensation of workers injured on the job passed in 1886, though it still left the process largely in the hands of the courts. As industrialization and therefore the number of accidents grew, as juries increasingly held employers responsible for injuries, and as the labor movement organized around the issue, the groundwork was laid for a more substantial change. The 1914 reforms, based on an inquiry by Chief Justice of Ontario Sir William Meredith, saw workers give up their right to sue in return for an administrative no-fault system paid by employers that was, at least in theory, supposed to ensure speedy and reliable payments for as long as an injured worker was disabled. While in many ways a gain for workers, the system since then has, as one might predict, just shifted the terrain for the struggle between workers and employers. In broad strokes, employers and their political representatives have done whatever they can over the years to minimize costs and therefore the supports that the system provides, even when that harms working people, and workers have done their best to push for improvements in the system. The Thunder Bay Injured Workers Support Group was founded in 1984 in the context of one iteration of that ongoing struggle. The conservative government of the day was attempting to pass legislation that would have changed things for the worse in how permanently disabled workers were compensated. Mobilization by injured workers and their allies across the province, including in Thunder Bay, beat back those changes. But the struggle continued. Legislation passed by another conservative government in the late 1990s and regulations issued by a subsequent liberal government remade the system in important ways to the detriment of workers. The Thunder Bay group does a lot of different things. One core commitment is peer support, both in group settings and to the extent that they can in the context of individual cases and claims. As well, they work with researchers to develop evidence to support the needs of injured workers. More broadly, they draw from the experiences of their membership to identify systemic problems with workplace compensation in Ontario, and then engage in advocacy, lobbying, and other activities to push for improvements by the Workplace Safety Insurance Board, formerly called the Workers' Compensation Board, and the provincial government. The issues they deal with cover a broad range. One specific case, for instance, involves construction workers who were part of a rebuild at a paper mill in Dryden, Ontario, 20 years ago, who were exposed to chemicals during the work and are experiencing high rates of illness. The group is helping those workers demand accountability, while also connecting them with workers facing related issues elsewhere in the province. Injured workers have also launched a legal case over the way that the WSIB calculates cost of living increments, which consistently end up lower than other government COLA calculations. More generally, they push back however they can against the many rules, regulations, and procedures at the WSIB that they say make it very difficult for workers to get what they need in terms of both care and compensation. Finally, the group does public education related to the issues faced by injured and disabled workers and to their vision for what a more just system might look like, as well as to push back against the pervasive social stigma that so often unjustly frames injured workers as freeloaders and malingerers. I speak with Patterson, Mantis, and LaFrancois about the work of the Thunder Bay Injured Workers Support Group.
My name is Eugene LaFrancois. I am the president of the Thunder Bay and District Injured Workers Support Group. I got injured in 1985, and it's been a whirlwind ride since then.
My name is Janet Patterson. I am a lot of years injured worker. I am the president of the Ontario Network of Injured Worker Groups.
I'm Steve Mantis. I, too, am an injured worker. I lost my left arm in an industrial accident in 1978. I was one of the founding members of the Thunder Bay and District Injured Worker Support Group and presently serve as the treasurer of the Thunder Bay Group. We were founded in 1984, and we have three or four main goals. Number one is to provide information and support to injured workers and their families. Number two is to identify and deal with systemic problems that we hear from our membership, so we interact with the WSIB, the Workers' Compensation Board, and the provincial government on those. We also provide education to the general public to get more understanding and support for injured and disabled workers in the future.
What is the Thunder Bay context like, specifically in terms of the sectors of workers and kinds of injuries that are significant in the community?
We really talk to people from a wide range of sectors. Our economy in the Northwest here has been really based in the forest industry over time, but we're seeing that become less and less as the economy changes. Now, Thunder Bay is kind of a hub for healthcare, for government, and for education that services an area of about 400, 500 kilometers around us. So a lot of the folks we see are folks from healthcare, from education, from construction, from the forestry, from the service industry, personal support workers, a whole range of people. And really, we're seeing a range of issues from fatalities to repetitive strain injuries, issues around stress and mental health, and the kind of regular traumatic injuries that happen in heavy physical jobs, a lot of which we have in our region.
How did the group get started back in the 80s?
We got started as part of the struggle against the changes to the Workers' Compensation Act in the early 80s. There was legislation on the table back in 1983 that would see all the injured workers who had a permanent pension that was close to, I think, 130,000 workers at that time, would lose their pensions and would be evaluated in terms of their projected future wage loss up until age 65. We'd learned about that in January of 1984. It was a meeting hosted by our local community legal clinic, and we had a guest speaker from Toronto from one of the injured worker groups, and he gave us a lowdown on all the changes. And we got formed that night to have our say to really protect our pensions for ourselves and all those over 100,000 workers in Ontario. Really, our focus was understanding, learning about the proposed legislation, sharing our experiences one to another, and educating each other about how the system worked now and how it might work with these proposed changes going forward. And we were part of what was a growing movement at that time that stopped that legislation. And legislation was brought forward in 1984 that basically just gave us positive things going forward. So we got formed really on a high note of success.
Give listeners an overview of the group's activities these days.
One of the biggest things is finding out who our allies are. Is it the unions? Are they our 100% allies? Yes, they are allies, but are they doing enough? Well, that's to be debated. Back then, there's a bunch of poverty groups. Were we in that section? Some of us said, yes, we were. So some of us said, no. Are we disabled? And to this very day, we cannot answer that question. Are we disabled or are we injured workers? Or, as I'm starting to come around, we are injured workers with a disability. The politicians, they don't know how to answer the injured workers. I had a minister of labor saying, oh, all injured workers should go under the disabled.
And just to clarify for listeners, this is a debate because those two categories are dealt with through different regulations and different support systems.
I was president of Onewig at the time. I said, I can't bring that to my membership saying that all injured workers are going to be under disabled. And the reason for that is that it takes all the pressure off of the employers and puts it onto the taxpayer. Because who pays for disabled is the taxpayers. So yeah, we have a lot of friends out there. We do a lot of coalition building, but the friends who we thought were really our friends turned out to be not so friendly. And that is a long story. And here we are just a bunch of ragtag injured workers trying to figure it out.
Our first starting point and continues to this day is that issue of peer support. And what that looks like is we first had to educate ourselves. And we did that really by telling our stories to each other. And when we saw that there were overlaps or similarities in our stories, we delved into that deeper and went, oh, look, it's not just you and me and Eugene. There is a whole bunch of us that are facing the same challenge, the same barrier. And that's an issue that we need to then take forward as a systemic issue. We've always had an opportunity to come together, oftentimes over a coffee and some cookies or donuts, and talk about these things. With the pandemic, that's really changed, and we've gone online. We sponsor a session from 10 till 12 every Tuesday morning on Zoom, and we continue that part of peer support and education. We oftentimes have guest speakers who are experts in different aspects of compensation or the law or workplace issues or health or mental health. But during the session, we're there to support each other. And it's not unusual in the middle of a session, someone will share that they're in crisis. And the session kind of immediately turns to how can we help you? What can we do to help alleviate that crisis? Oftentimes, there's mental health issues involved in that as well. And as we experience and hear these stories and we see the similarities, we begin to pick some of those issues to focus on. And mental health is one of the big ones. Our peer support and our social kind of networking is planned to help people reconnect to a social network, to a group of other people going through similar things, and to gain some of their confidence back and see how they're positioned in relation to this big power, the Workers' Compensation Board, now the WSIB, who has so much power over them and their ability to pay their bills and feed their families. As people learn more, they get more confidence, they see they're not alone, they see they're facing these barriers together, and they're better able to meet these challenges on an individual basis, and sometimes join us together on a collective basis to face these barriers really in that systemic way. We take on issues that are both regional and provincial. So we work closely with our provincial umbrella organization, the Ontario Network of Injured Workers Groups, which Janet is also the president of. But we also work on issues that are more local. And one of those, as an example, is a cluster of construction workers that have gotten sick from toxic exposures on their job. And this happened 20 years ago. At the rebuild of a paper mill in Dryden, Ontario, which is about 3 or 4 hours west of us. There were some 400 to 500 workers working on this project, which was to reduce the pollution coming out of the paper mill. But the workers that were building the recovery boiler were working oftentimes in the plume coming from the paper mill that was full of toxins and heavy metals and all kinds of chemicals. And many of these workers have had ongoing illnesses as a result, and quite a number have died since. So we've been working with this group of workers to get public attention around this. to get them both medical treatment and financial compensation for the losses they've experienced, and then also to try to hold the employers accountable, because the mill managers knew that this was a risk and they chose to expose these workers instead of protecting them from the toxic exposures. And we thought this kind of thing should not happen. So we've been working closely on that as a local issue, but then connecting it together with other clusters of workers who have been exposed to chemicals that have gotten sick in other parts of the province and are currently meeting with the Ministry of Labor and the WSIB to bring action forward, both for the workers that were exposed in Dryden on that construction project, but also to workers right across the province that are exposed to toxic chemicals.
What are some of the other systemic issues that have emerged from what you've heard from your members and from other injured workers that you talk to?
One of the big things is injured workers who have permanent impairments, they receive the cost of living. According to the WSIB legislation, it should be established each year, just the same as with Stats Canada, but they're not following that. So the WSIB, there's going to be a court hearing we're expecting to be in June. For last year, the rate was 4.7% and injured workers received 2.7%. And now this year it was 6.9% and we received 6.5%. So we are asking the court to rule on this. Even during COVID, there was no supports. The different branches provided some. It wasn't that it was a big amount of money, but they gave some money for veterans, for seniors, for those on Ontario Works and ODSP. And when we asked the WSIB, after entertaining it for 3 months, I think finally on the next month when we asked again at our meeting, and they just said, no, it's not happening. But for instance, with COVID, like, you weren't going to go get on the bus now to go get your meds, for instance, so you'd have to take a taxi. And these kind of things resulted in more costs. And we find that particularly for those with permanent impairments, a lot of people, probably about half of them, are living in poverty. They haven't received the loss of earnings from the compensation system. So it's a very big struggle that they face just in order to survive.
It's the whole attitude of putting profits before people. It's not just Thunder Bay. We're talking pretty well the world. You could see it everywhere. Just follow me here. You have an expenditure that you have to do every year.
And he's talking about employers here.
And it's called a WSIB premium. You pay this premium or else you don't get your certificate, then you don't go to work. So now, if I don't have any lost time claims on this premium, I'm going to get a portion back. So now you have a cash incentive, not for the worker, but for the employer, not to report injuries, because then he'll get cash incentive back. So what do? Well, you discourage claims. You know all those TV sets that they give away to workers who have no injuries or jackets or a trip to Montego Bay or whatever? Well, how do you think that works? Right now we have a sawmill here in Thunder Bay, a sawmill that has 750,000 hours of injury-free time. No injuries in a sawmill. Just look at the odds of that happening in a sawmill. So claim suppression by employers has been happening since they introduced rebate back for your premium. That, I think, is what dogs the injured workers against the employer. Because it's all money. It's all profit. And the governments have bought into the employers. That is one of the driving issues. And there's a whole litany of things.
We're trying to make the Workers' Compensation Board, the WSIB, worker-friendly. The idea is, if you get hurt at work, you need medical attention, you need time off work, you need some support, you need some help, you need financial support, but you need also other support. And for those injuries that are more serious, that are going to take longer to heal and might have long-term ramifications for, say, a permanent impairment, there's many changes that happen in your life as a result. And we think the compensation board should be there to help you through that. What we've experienced, and many others have experienced, is that rather than help, they're adding insult to injury. They create a stigma that workers that are coming looking for help are looking for a free ride or looking for a handout. Maybe they go further, that they might be scammers or malingerers. This attitude that happens within the compensation board of the staff, and oftentimes that spreads into the larger community, creates real problems for workers who are struggling to adjust to now living with a disability. So we're saying, hey, we want to heal, we want to get better, but we're being treated as if we're liars and scammers. 90% of our membership here in Thunder Bay, when we did a survey some years ago, said, that's my number one priority. I want to go back to my job. I want to go back to work. Unfortunately, many employers don't want people with a disability or an injury working for them. We end up feeling like we're damaged goods that they just want to get rid of and be replaced by young, healthy workers. Many employers really isn't willing to kind of look at modifying the work in a real way to change the design of work so it can accommodate people with a disability, where they're actually required to do that under human rights. There's no one really monitoring that. So the situation runs into trouble, and it's the workers who are usually blamed for that, and as a result, can be cut off benefits entirely, where we become uncooperative. The implication is we really don't want to work. We're not trying hard enough. But in fact, we're not the ones who control the design of the job and the management of the work site. That's really the employer's job, and they are not, in many cases, providing the necessary accommodations to accommodate our disabilities that were caused by not taking that preventative action in the first place at the workplace. So we're blamed for any of the shortcomings of the system, and that's causing really that insult to injury, making our disabilities worse and worse.
Regarding the stigma, it is widespread and it goes further. A lot of doctors don't want to be involved with injured workers because there's forms to be filled out. The WSIB doesn't pay them the same way. You know, you go for massage and what the WSIB pays is roughly 50% of what your massage appointment would cost. A real barrier for injured workers is when they're trying to get medical attention, well, right away you get stigmatized, particularly if you need help with pain management. And right away you're looking for drugs, you're a druggie. And that is not necessarily the case at all, but that's your first barrier. The other part of it is the doctor isn't listened to. The longer we do not get treatment, the more pronounced our injury, the effects of it are on us. And if the doctor says, this is what you need to recover, if we were given that as timely and never mind play the compensation games, you know, the famous one is, well, you can always appeal it. Well, you know what? People take 10 years to get through the appeal system. But by the time your body has lived with all of that, your hopes of recovery are very slim, if there are any at all. So there's a huge cost involved. And I'm not talking a dollar and cents cost, but I'm talking about the bigger picture of the cost to the worker, cost to your family, because now, you know, you're hurting all the time. You suffer with depression. You just kick yourself around because this is not what you signed up to be. You entered into a relationship first with a partner, and now you have family and you can't take care of them. All these things, they accumulate. And they are all impacted. So it is now not only the worker, but it impacts the family too. If the worker was the one who had family benefits, you know, all your medical health benefits, if they've lost their job, they've lost their benefits too. And a lot of the injured workers who do not receive entitlement, they go to Ontario Works, and so they can move up and to get onto ODSP.
And those are the general welfare and disability social assistance systems in Ontario.
So when we talk about how committed we are to a compensation system that is fair and that is doing what it's supposed to be doing, there's a lot of reasons why.
What does your group do to try and make things better around some of these systemic issues?
Legislative change right now. We are involved with all kinds of lawyers. We're involved with all kinds of researchers, and we're trying to make legislative changes to the WSIB. Right now, if you ask a lawyer who knows about WSIB, they say the laws are pretty well damn perfect. It's the policies. So legislative change with policy. We have to change people first, because the governments, they don't give a shit. because for what I can understand, they don't answer to the people.
The other thing that we do is we meet with our MPPs. We work with Lise Faugeois.
And she is the NDP MPP for Thunder Bay Superior North.
She was actually a board member with us for a number of years, so she's quite familiar with what injured workers face. But we've also met with the Fort William MPP. It's important to make sure that they can't say that they didn't know. And we feel that that's a very important part of it. If nothing else, they will know that these are the issues, and then we ask them to raise them in the House and to work on support for them.
We're working with the NDP. There's a private members bill that's been tabled in the House two or three times now to deal with this issue of deeming, which is the issue where if the WSIB says you're ready to go back to work, they then assume you're getting your full pay and your cutoff benefits. So they're deeming you to have a job when in fact you don't have a job. This legislation, if it were to pass, would say you really have to base the lost wages on the actual lost wages as opposed to this make-believe. In terms of the issue that I talked about earlier, the exposure of these construction workers, tomorrow night we have one in a series of town hall meetings where we're trying to reach out and find as many of the workers as well as their family members who were exposed during this time 20 years ago on that construction site. And we're working hand in hand with the Occupational Health Clinic for Ontario workers to do medical evaluations, to document what their health conditions have been, and to do the analysis to see if it can be linked back to the exposures. And then we're also working with the Injured Workers Community Legal Clinic, who are experts in terms of individual representation, to help guide people through the process of having their claims hopefully accepted, definitely administered. The third area is we reach out regularly to staff and management at the WSIB to build bridges, to begin to address issues that we think are key. We've got two or three working groups right now that are meeting on an ongoing basis with staff or management at the WSIB to see if we can't get some traction to address some of these issues on the policy side. So we try to address things on the legislative side, the policy side, the public awareness, and really breaking new ground, especially around the area of occupational diseases.
You have been listening to my interview with Steve Mantis, Eugene LeFrancois, and Janet Patterson about the Thunder Bay Injured Workers Support Group. To learn more about the group, go to thunderbayinjuredworkers.com. For those of you who only encounter Talking Radical Radio through the show itself, this is a heads up that the show will be ending its 10-year weekly run at the end of February 2023. And you can look at the pinned posts on our social media accounts for more information. To find out more about Talking Radical Radio, the guests, the theme music, and the ways that you can listen, go to talkingradical.ca and click on the link for the radio show. On the site, you can sign up for email updates or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, SoundCloud, and other platforms. I'm Scott Nye, a writer and media producer based in Hamilton, Ontario, and the author of two books of Canadian history told through the stories of activists published by Fernwood Publishing. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you tune in again next week.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, February 24th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social